Hello, everyone. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to another episode of the Event Hustler Show. My name is Liz Caruso, and I just am already in the midst of a great conversation with Steve Adelman from Adelman Law Group. It's a crazy world, and really excited to just take this breath every week and talk to another very smart industry professional who can give us their perspective. So, Steve, thank you so much for taking some time to join us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Greetings from Scottsdale, Arizona. And I was just telling Liz before we went live, I just came back from vacation. So if I seem unusually relaxed for me, those of you who've heard me before, that's why. I just had a very nice vacation. And I'm in the midst of a whirlwind of travel to several different regions in this great land. So I have some insight into our very divergent views of health, safety, law, and, well, reality itself.
It's a lot to think about, right?
It is. And, you know, what we were just saying before we went on is I'm really astonished that people have opinions about objective reality. You know, the joke I just made is, you know, if you hold something in your hand and then drop it, it's gonna fall. Gravity is there and exists, whether you believe in gravity or not. I always thought that, you know, basic health and science was like gravity. I never thought that having an opinion was a thing about science, but clearly, I didn't know that. I'm just Adelman the lawyer, so I was wrong. And now I'm seeing how really diverse our opinions are.
Well, I mean, it's America, at the very least, that likes to have their opinions, no?
Yeah.
About too many things. You know, that's the idea, is can you have an opinion about something that's just a fact? It's just true.
I don't think that's peculiarly American.
No.
We're seeing it because this is a moment when we are unusually polarized. But, you know, this phenomenon of having opinions about reality, it is ageless. We're just seeing the American perspective because we're Americans, and there's a lot of it going on right now because of coronavirus and people having too much time on their hands and, you know, existing in their media silos. And you know, none of us are, well, most of us aren't going anywhere. So we see the people that we choose to see and don't have a lot of interaction with, you know, unselected strangers. So there isn't a lot of confrontation against our viewpoint, certainly not by people that we trust enough to listen.
Yeah. But you, for example, have been traveling. And what has that been like over the past couple of weeks, just to see what's happening around the country as it relates to COVID and all the different protocols and cultures that you're seeing? What has that been like?
Travel is really fascinating. So my Adelman's travels over the last month, I feel like, you know, this is a travel show now. So I gave my first in-person conference presentation in 17 months at Summer NAMM in Nashville, Tennessee, late July. And that was, so I'm based in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I will just say it the way I do because I'm not from here. I live here now. Arizona has done virtually everything wrong from a health and safety standpoint during this pandemic. Our governor has not quite run with Ron DeSantis, but not far behind. So we have prohibitions on requiring mask mandates, and consequently our hospitalizations are rising. Schools which just reopened here in Arizona are experiencing very significant COVID outbreaks among teenagers and unvaccinated children. So that's my perspective. My baseline is I live in a place which is highly problematic. You know, not number one, but we're in kind of the second tier of states that are bringing on our own troubles.
Right.
Yes. So, John, I'm coming to you. Literally, actually, I'm coming to you. So first, I live in Arizona. Then I went to Nashville. I did an in-person conference. It was great to be on stage. It was great to be among humans. Because I'm in Arizona, where masking wasn't a thing, social distancing has never been a thing. You know, the attitude around here is, what pandemic? When I went to Nashville, I felt pretty much fine. It wasn't materially different than what I was used to. To my surprise, when I went to the airport to leave Nashville at the end of my 4 days there, in the airport, in the terminal in Nashville, surrounded by people, literally surrounded, the terminal was packed, only then did I feel uncomfortable. Mm. And I don't know why, I still haven't been able to identify it. Yeah, sorry, Peggy, you know, I'm in Scottsdale. It's unnerving. So anyway, Nashville was fine when I was there. The terminal unnerved me because there were so many people in so tight a space, no one wearing face coverings. Hmm. The CDC guidance hadn't changed that at that point. So I was wearing a face covering because I don't like being around lots and lots of people who I don't know without a face covering. I've been fully vaccinated since February. So it's not my health that I'm protecting, it's other people, sure. Which is a whole separate issue that we'll probably get into.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I came back from Nashville. Almost immediately, I turned around, went up to Portland, Oregon to see my 89-year-old aunt with whom I'm very close. And she's not traveling, she's 89. So I went up to visit her. Portland, Oregon is a completely different world than either Arizona or Nashville, Tennessee. Everyone there is masking pretty much everywhere. The governor, Kate Brown, has slowed the roll of the state repeatedly. In California and Oregon and Washington state, they've sort of acted as a block, and they have taken the science incredibly seriously. So not only in deference to my aunt, who's in excellent health for 89, but still she's 89 years old, we wore face coverings whenever we were out in public. When we were together, we weren't, because my aunt is fully vaccinated also. I took her to her first vaccination, which was wonderful. And, you know, if you have the opportunity to show your love to a family member by taking them to be vaccinated, do that. It is, I found it really, really heartwarming, a true act of love. Anyway, so after Portland, then I went to Massachusetts. I am very honored to be doing some work for the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And so it was a workcation because I used to live in Massachusetts. So first I did my work with BSO in the city of Boston, where lots of people were wearing face coverings, not uniformly, but mostly. Mm. And then I did the vacation part down on Martha's Vineyard, which was fantastic. So here's an endorsement for Martha's Vineyard in the summertime. Wow, is it beautiful and just so wonderful and relaxing. Anyway, on the vineyard.
Looks like I lost.
We would have been status. So that I thought was a really nice way of putting it. Compliance was at just about 100%. And now I'm back in Arizona and I went to the gym this morning where I was one of maybe three people out of, I don't know, 75 or so who was wearing a face covering. And so I'm back to my baseline level of frustration, wondering what are we thinking is going to be the end result? You know, for people who are still not wearing face coverings in indoor settings around other people, what do you think is going to happen? You know, do you just live in a Vegas roulette wheel mindset all the time? I don't think that's worth it. And as an event professional, or we can talk about events, as an event professional, I don't get it. You know, the line that I have been using for the last couple of months is life is getting more complicated. First, when CDC kind of gave us whiplash by saying, if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear a face covering at all. That came as a real surprise. So I'm vice president of an international association called the Event Safety Alliance. Mm-hmm. And ESA, my organization, partnered with NIVA, the National Independent Venue Association, and they have contacts with CDC, and so do we. So ESA and NIVA partnered to create the Safe in Sound reopening guidance, which was actually my third time writing reopening guidance during this pandemic. ESA came out with two rounds of our own, and I was principal author of those two. And then the Safe and Sound one, I was a significant contributor to that as well. So we know what's going to happen. And, you know, when we came out with our reopening guidance, the third round, we had followed the science. And then the very next day, CDC basically turned the science around and said, hurrah, you know, summer has finally arrived and
you it's know, over.
Be vaccinated, go for it, you know, take your face covering off, throw in the wash, and then leave it at home. You don't need it for indoor or outdoor spaces. Congratulations, finally we have the wet, hot summer we've all been, you know, pining away for more than a year. Thank you, CDC. We had 2 months of summer, and now it's gone.
And here, yeah.
And it's gone. So to me, the issue is, what do we do with this information that, you know, our 2 months of liberation for vaccinated people, our 2 months is gone. And it's not gone because of us. It's gone because of people who have declined to get a vaccination shot, which is free, incredibly easy to find, and more effective than the vaccines that we all got as tiny children when we were getting enrolled in school. And there's a reminder, by the way, that even people who are reluctant to get the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, we all got vaccinated way back when. So, you know, don't make me go down the road. I occasionally do battle with people in social media. Really bad habit, but I do it anyway.
You know, the hard habit to break.
Yeah. You know, I eventually just lose my patience with people. Don't make me go down the road of inquiring into all of the health choices you all have made. You know, I got into it. Well, I declined to get into it on social media with someone who said, oh, so you're telling us that we should get a vaccine which is not FDA approved. Is that what you're saying? Well, let me be clear. Yes. Yes, I am. I am, because I resisted. But I suggest that anyone who raises that FDA argument, number one, is not going to rush out to get vaccinated in a couple of weeks when FDA finally gets through their Byzantine governmental review process. They're not going to. They're just going to find some other excuse. But besides that, hell yes. Yes, I am, because I don't know anyone who in their entire lives has waited until a government agency has said, okay, you know, starter's gun is sounding now, and then said, oh my goodness, you know, I didn't believe it. In this before, yeah. But now that the government, which I generally oppose, now that the government has said this is okay, oh, certainly I'll do it. I'll participate readily. Those words have never been uttered. So that's where we are. Life has gotten more complicated, but the solution's gotten really easy. For event professionals, I think the solution has gotten really, really easy. And the advice that I'm giving to my clients is roughly as follows. Roughly, I say, because if you want my real advice, you have to pay for it. But generally, here, I do this for a living, which means I have to earn a living. Like you, podcast listeners, I didn't work for quite a while during the pandemic. I am a self-employed lawyer specializing in live events. So when there are no events, Steve's not working either. Anyway, generally speaking, my advice is require proof of vaccination at the time of registering for whatever event it is. Or, you know, if you're, say, a wedding planner, you know, get that assurance from the wedding couple that they are fully vaccinated and their guests will be, and if not, that they're going to come with a negative PCR test in hand. You know, get that in writing in your contract. And if for some reason you can't get that, give serious thought to whether the money is worth jeopardizing your health, the health of people you love, and the health of people you're going to run into at the store along the way. Because that's really it. It is that simple. You know, if the vaccines were less effective, it wouldn't be that simple. But they are. They're incredibly effective. If the vaccines were less available, we might be having a different conversation. But they are literally available at your local supermarket, pharmacy, probably your gas station, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
So there's no barrier to getting this. Certainly cost is no barrier because it's free.
Yeah. So, you know, I live in New York where we got hit very hard in the beginning, and I've been very, very cautious because we have a child under two. So even if we could go somewhere, he's too young to wear a mask. So we really haven't gone anywhere. And New York City has been one of those first places to require vaccines for indoor entertainment, indoor eating, all of these things. We actually have someone who's asking whether CES made the right move requiring vaccines in January, even for international travelers. I think it's something that people are really thinking about. And we've heard the question, I'm sure you get it all the time, like, can you even ask if people are vaccinated? How do you know that their paper they're showing you is legit? Like, what are your thoughts around just doing what you recommend?
So those are two different questions. So
yes,
let's do the second one first because it's simpler. I won't apply an adjective. What I was going to say is, unfortunately, the vaccine rollout didn't come with the kind of verification of vaccine status that we now really could use.
Yeah.
The priority was getting the vaccine rolled out. And I think that was the right priority. It's just, it's inconvenient now because we're going to have this patchwork of, you know, New York's Excelsior Pass and the New York City Pass, whose name I haven't learned yet. And, you know, then there'll be different pieces of technology and apps that you can put on your phone, all of which really are some variation on taking a picture of your CDC issued card, which has someone's handwriting on it. When, you know, this will date me, when I was a kid growing up in New York and I got my driver's license, my first New York driver's license was a piece of cardboard, just like my CDC vaccination card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in less trusting times, they became laminated things that have watermarks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, the vaccine doesn't have that. So we're back to pieces of cardboard, easily faked. That's unfortunate because there will be some people who will go to the effort and expense of faking something which would be free and easy and keep them alive if they would just do it right the first time. I don't get that, but if somebody's going to go to that much effort to remain exposed to a deadly virus, you know, I guess I see them wanting to take their chances with Darwinian selection, and I throw up my hands and concede that they're going to be able to do it. So that's what I have to say about the possibility of faking a vaccination card. They're going to get away with it if they really work at it. So the only thing that I tell my own clients is look at what a correct card looks like. Because that's what people do when they're checking IDs at the, you know, sure, at the entrance to a nightclub, or what bartenders are supposed to do. They're supposed to basically have a book that shows different driver's licenses and what they really look like. Mm-hmm. So that's what you should do with CDC issued vaccination cards as well. Whoever is checking, just know what a correct card looks like. Really nothing more that they can do. And if someone is going to go to that much trouble, you know, best of luck to them. As for the law, now we're onto my high ground because I'm a lawyer. So let's do a quick Q&A. This will be a bit of a lightning round. So here's Steve Adelman on the law related to coronavirus. So somebody would ask me, you know, let's say, Liz, you know, you said, hey, Steve, can someone legally ask if a person is vaccinated? Well, assuming that we are not in Florida, where I'm going next week, frankly, quaking in my boots, but I'm giving another presentation in Orlando. And God knows what the vaccination status will be. I may ask for a show of hands just to see if any cops come out from the wings and try to arrest me, you know, and that'll be ugly.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. So assuming that you are not in one of the states where the law has been turned on its head and the usual rights and liberties that those governors proclaim proudly, they have actually restricted them themselves because of some different calculation of rights and liberties in this case. Assuming you're not in one of those states, Florida and Texas, looking at you, then it is perfectly legal to ask someone's vaccination status. How do we know? Because there's no legal prohibition. So let's start with the U.S. Constitution. You know, if you've seen Hamilton the musical, you have a basic sense of where the Constitution came from, you know, a bunch of fallible white men. So, you know, sorry, Hamilton misrepresents the color of the founders, but they were all white men with property and money. The founders, the framers of our Constitution, that's the way lawyers say it, the framers of our Constitution never envisioned coronavirus. There is nothing about the right to privacy in your vaccination status under any clause of the U.S. Constitution or its many amendments. Specifically, I will call out the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That's one that freedom, big air quotes, freedom advocates cite when they say, oh, I'm not telling you, I don't have to. No, no, you're wrong. The legal term for that claim that someone doesn't have to say their vaccination status, the legal term for that is wrong. There are other terms for it as well. But it is most definitely not a true fact that someone can boldly thrust out their chest and say, I don't have to tell you. You know, unless they're in one of the few states where the governor has usurped the usual liberties on which they, you know, pound the table, but instead rescinded those liberties. In every other state, it is perfectly legal to ask someone's vaccination status as a condition of entry. How do we know? Well, again, the Constitution does not speak to this issue. Neither does state law, again, in those few states where the governor has turned the law and logic on its head. Here's an example. When I was a young boy, I learned the term no shoes, no shirt, no service. There's an actual legal term for that. It's called a business invitee. So now you're learning some law, but this won't hurt a bit. A business invitee is someone who enters onto the property of another subject to the rules created by that property owner or operator. So let's apply that to events. I'm going to, well, let's take it out of the context of Florida because I'm going to Florida next week. But if I were going someplace else with a governor who hadn't rescinded basic civil liberties, then they could ask me, so Steve Adelman, you would like to join us here at this event. Please show us your vaccination card. That would be the equivalent of if you choose to join us, you have to wear a shirt and shoes. If I don't wear a shirt or shoes or show my vaccination card, I can't come in because my invitation, remember, I'm a business invitee. My invitation is conditional, conditioned on me meeting the criteria set forth by the event operator. You know, if you're a sports fan, you know, there's a fan code of conduct. You can't bring your switchblade to the football game.
Right.
You know, people who go to parties, you can't bring your personal alcohol to a place where they sell it. There are lots of examples of this. So vaccination status, wearing a mask mandate, those are all just the latest iterations of what we all learned as children. No shoes, no shirt, no service.
Yeah, that's good. I see first Ramon is here. He says you are funny and legal. Very nice.
Oh, thank you, Ramon. I appreciate that.
We also have a question from Rucker. He wants to know, what would you advise government in regards to current travel bans for Europeans, as an example, not being able to come directly to the U.S.? They'd love to have other people, all countries, come back to the States, especially vaccinated.
Wow. Well, Rutger, thank you for elevating my status from humble country lawyer to public policymaker.
Yeah.
I don't imagine that, since I have some fairly strongly held opinions, which I don't hedge about, I don't imagine I could ever get elected, but well, let's just pretend. What I would advise is for people who are fully vaccinated, who can show actual evidence of that, because being a lawyer, I prefer evidence, you know, trust but verify. That's yeah. My mantra. For people who can show evidence that they are healthy, safe, and smart, I'm good with that. You know, please join us. And, you know, on your way out to wherever you return to at the end of your visit, please take some of the unvaccinated Americans with you, because they're slowing our roll. You know, they're the ones who caused our wet, hot summer to end after 2 months. And, you know, I am actually really frustrated about that. You know, all kidding aside, I was looking forward to doing stuff. I was looking forward to playing with people and seeing friends. And, you know, for me, it's not just that I travel and, you know, tend to get kind of skittish when I'm around lots of people in places where I know that vaccination rates are low and people are taking what I believe are foolish, needless risks with my health, not just theirs. Yeah. That's a them problem, but they're taking risks with my health. But it affects our industry, and that applies to me as well. You know, as vice president of the Event Safety Alliance, we hold our annual conference at the beginning of December every year. Last year was obviously completely virtual. This year, for our December 1, 2, and 3 Event Safety Summit in Pennsylvania, we always planned for it to be a hybrid event, but part of the hybrid event was we were going to have, you know, probably about 150 people in person on this fabulous campus in Pennsylvania, the Rock Lidditz campus. If you've ever heard of it, it's really cool. If you haven't, look it up. And it's great. And it's a really terrific, motivated group of very interesting people. And it's really cool to get together. And I was looking forward to it very much. And now we are looking at the rates of hospitalization and the progress of the Delta variant, and nervously looking down the road at what might be coming after the Delta variant. Mm-hmm. And we're not scientists. We read the science. We follow it. I certainly read it all the time. But I'm a lawyer trying to keep up with epidemiology. And that's not a winning combination, you know, try as I do. So we're looking at our own calendar, our own event. And this conversation that we're having right now, Liz, is it's not at all academic. We, the Event Safety Alliance, are having to make the exact same go or no-go decision on the in-person part of our event that everyone else does. And it ain't easy, and I don't have a simple answer. It's not like I'm holding back the good stuff.
Yeah.
We're struggling just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a legal standpoint, the struggle includes our event cancellation language and our deposit money for the room block at the hotel.
Yeah.
And, you know, the caterer and all the people who are going to erect the stage and hang the lights and bring the speakers and stuff. We got a lot of vendors who are waiting for us to say, are they going to have a gig at the beginning of December on the Rock Lidditz campus in Pennsylvania, or are they not? And we're going to wait until the last minute that we can without jeopardizing anyone's travel plans.
And I think this is what I'm sensing in the industry and what I hear from so many planners is a different level of desperation than March 2020. March 2020 threw everyone off. Everyone was canceling everything. It was very, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? But I think to your point, June, July, CDC comes out, says no masks. The industry was ready to get back full force. Like, let's do this. Things started getting booked left and right. Everyone I talked to was, I'm busier than I can even imagine. And now it's back to the point where you're talking about where we planned this and now here I am again. Am I canceling or we're moving forward? Is it hybrid? Is it in-person? Is it virtual? And I think it's just a different level of like frustration because of why we're here and desperation. I mean, people need the money. They need the business. They've promised to vendors that they know haven't been making money for the last year and a half and now may have to pull out. It's just a really hard time, I think, for the events industry. I think even harder than a year and a half ago.
I don't think it's harder because, I mean, I remember the terror that I felt.
Yeah.
It was not the best time in my own life anyway, but sure. I was terrified. You know, I'm a lawyer. That's one of the jobs that, you know, parents urge their kids to go to school to become in order to have job security and,
right.
you know, a nice car and house and stuff. I had no paid work for a couple of months. So I was terrified. And everybody I know in the industry was out of work, which I've never experienced that before. And we had no way of knowing how long it would last and, you know, no reason to feel reassured by anything going on the national level and for many of us at the state level either. So for me, that was the most frightening. I'm on a different emotion now. I'm frustrated. I'm sure. Frustrated. And when my frustration boils over, I'm angry. And that's not a good way of persuading anyone. You know, I try to persuade people. Mostly I do it by using words carefully. You know, before we started recording, we were talking about what people mean when they use words like freedom. And what I think it is, in the context of, you know, I am exercising my freedom by not getting vaccinated, I think what that really means is I am exercising the entitlement that I am used to having. I'm exercising, you know, the privilege that I was born into or that I have earned through some combination of good fortune and my own hard work. I'm exercising something that is going to hurt other people, but I don't care. That makes me angry. It just does. And anger is not a constructive or nice emotion. I'm not proud to admit that I walk around with a bit of a chip on my shoulder. And, you know, the only time these days when I voluntarily go into a space where I'm surrounded by people whose vaccination status I don't know and who I can see are not being masked is the gym every morning. And it pisses me off. It really does, because I look around and I see that if they would put a face covering on, they'd be no worse off than me. I mean, yes, when I'm doing cardio, I huff and puff and sometimes I pull it down under my nose so I can catch my breath, but I make sure that I'm not within 6 feet of somebody when I do that. And then when I have caught my breath, I put it back up the way it should be, over my nose, under my mouth. So I know it's possible. And to screw around with other people's lives and livelihoods because somebody is making what I consider to be a bogus freedom argument, which really is, I'm entitled, I don't give a crap about your situation, your life, your job, your family. I just want what I want when I want it. Yeah, that makes me angry. So I'm not terrified the way I was in March and April and first half of May of 2020. That was real fear because we had no way of knowing when it would end, how it would end. Now I know exactly how it will end. Enough people get vaccinated in combination with people who get sick and develop the antibodies that eventually, absent some new variant, we will stumble our way into herd immunity sufficient so that this coronavirus will be like other viruses where, you know, the smart people will get vaccinated, you know, in the fall and the other ones will get sick in the winter. And that's a choice. It's a dumb choice, but it's a choice. But we're not there yet. But I think that's the most likely outcome to this. And I may be wrong, you know, a different variant will throw a gigantic monkey wrench into my neat pat little answer, which just requires some patience and, you know, keeping my hostility at a low boil. But I think that's the most logical scenario in a situation where logic has consistently been defied by people's choices and a vaccine that does not care about any of us or what we want or our lives or livelihoods.
Yeah, it's true. So much to say. I can't believe I just looked at the clock and realized we're past our half hour by a good 6 or 7 minutes. And I want to respect your time. I know you have other things going on. We have lots of comments coming in from those who are watching, some questions. So maybe we can jump to those.
Yeah, let's do that. I'll stop giving my soliloquies. Yeah, I'm good for about another 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. We won't go that long. But so one question that came in, where did it go? Let's see here. Okay, so it's just from a random Facebook user. If hosting an event in one of the states like Florida or Texas that you've mentioned, does the state law apply or can the host organization kind of overrule with what they want? And I think we're seeing this play out in the schools with the mask mandates, but.
Yes, you are. So it depends on how eager you are for a fight. Laws are not... I'm just going to reach for the third rail. Let's do it. Laws are not self-enforcing. So, you know, like my joke, I'm going to Orlando. I'm going to be speaking on stage from Orlando literally a week from right now. So I, because I'm me and I'm snarky, I probably will ask for a show of hands of people who are vaccinated because I know that, you know, in some incredibly narrow reading of Florida law, somebody might say, hey, you can't do that. That's a violation of Florida law. I don't think it is because I'm not really a lawbreaker, but sure. I certainly like to walk right up to the edge of the law. So your question, can the host organization defy the law of the state, such as Florida? Well, they can, so long as they are willing to deal with the consequences. And that's just like what you do when you common legal violation, speed. Not saying any of you speed, but if you know someone who ever has, that is precisely the same situation that we're in right now with requiring vaccination status in a state where the governor said you can't do that. So if you've ever exceeded the speed limit walked against a don't walk sign, then you too have played fast and loose with the law. You get to judge whether you're willing to do that now in the interest of health, safety, science, and logic, or you are going to bow down to the legal authorities. That's a question. I'm not going to suggest the answer for you, but that is actually how the question gets framed.
Sure, that makes sense. Now, knowing how you feel, I'm going to still ask this question, though. Ramon wants to know, curious what you would say to the freedom, quote unquote, seekers. Let's say someone is just like, they are not going to get the vaccine. You are their lawyer. What rights, if any, do they have? What should we know about those who wouldn't check all those boxes to come to our events?
The law actually makes that one really easy. So back to no shoes, no shirt, no service. If you are in a state where your governor has not precluded you from asking this question. So again, looking at you, Florida, Texas, South Carolina, you know, a few other states. But if you're not in one of those states and you can legally ask the question, or you're just going to be bold and do it anyway, the law makes it very simple. If someone does not answer the question, you don't have to let them in, period. And if they try to storm the doors, they won't. But if they do, they're a trespasser. That is the legal term for somebody who violates the rules of a public accommodation. They're a trespasser. And what we do with trespassers is we trespass them off the property. So whatever event you have, unless it's, I don't know, a wedding in someone's backyard, there probably is some security or law enforcement person, if not on premises, then at least a phone call away. And if you have someone who is belligerently asserting rights, which are not actual rights, they're a trespasser. And, you know, just like you would deal with them if they were trying to steal the silverware, you would deal with them the same way. You would get someone to trespass them off the property.
So they essentially have no rights to anything just because they have chosen that non-vaccination status.
No. You know, imagine somebody walking down the street says, "Ooh, you have a nice living room. I'm going to sit in your living room and put my feet on your coffee table." No, that's not how things work. The law of private property says you get to make the rules, which includes limiting access to your private property to your friends and invitees. No different for any event.
Sure. Okay. And then one last question I have for you. You did mention your conference is coming up in December and making these rule, these decisions, and knowing that you have contracts in place. And everyone I talked to is asking, is there something we could be adding to our contracts to give us this kind of protection so that if another variant comes up or whatever happens next, what do you say to that?
So here's a lawyer who's going to tell you the law does not provide an answer to this one.
Okay.
Contract language is particularly important now because you want your contract to accurately state what your agreement is. Having said that, times are changing fast, and the best way to negotiate a change, an amendment in a contract, is to be a nice person throughout the negotiating process. Don't be a jerk. So, I mean, my true honest answer, even to my own paying clients, is I, your lawyer, cannot write contract language that gives you a get out of jail free card. What I can do is I can avoid being such a fool, such an annoying, difficult negotiating partner, as to burn the bridge that you need to cross in order to renegotiate your contract so that you can put on your event at a time when it's healthy and safe to do so.
Sure.
So is there legal language that's the magic bullet that gets you out of a deal that you've already signed? No, there isn't. You know, what we are talking about is either the cancellation or force majeure provision in your contract. You have never read a force majeure provision. What are you waiting for? It's at the end of your contract in the boilerplate. You know, for another time, I can explain what it is and how it works. Badly is really the answer. But the true answer to what do you do if you need to go all virtual again this winter is be a nice person. Be a good partner to negotiate with. We're all going to be in this together. All of your vendors are going to be in the exact same position. If you are, you know, an event planner or organizer, you know, in a position to hire people, be nice to those people. Say, look, as soon as we are able to get our event back on the calendar, you know that I want to, because that's my livelihood also. And when we do, we're coming right back to you. And we're going to want a bigger cake. We're going to want more lights, you know, more of everything, because people are going to be so desperate to get back to events, having enjoyed the breath of fresh air of our 2-month wet, hot summer and then had it pulled out from under us again.
Yeah,
we're going to want to go bigger next time, and we're doing it with you.
Sure.
So that's the negotiating strategy that I actually do give to my paying clients. Being a nice person has value beyond any that the law can provide.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility when you can have a human-to-human conversation and find something that works for both sides. So thank you so much for sharing that. Now, let's say people have been watching, they love your perspective, they have lots more questions. How do you want people to reach out to you? What's the best way for them to connect?
email me. So my email address, so hi, I'm Steve Adelman. My email address, not surprisingly, is S Adelman. So S-A-D-E-L-M-A-N at AdelmanLawGroup.com. And I practice everywhere. I happen to be in Scottsdale, Arizona today, next week, Orlando. After that, coming to a city near you, perhaps. So literally, I practice throughout the U.S. and Canada because we're both common law countries and these principles work the same pretty much everywhere. I'm obviously well-versed in the law of different states because, well, that's where the action is right now. So if you have a question, yeah, send it my way. And, you know, if I can deal with it quickly, then it's on the house. And if it takes longer, perhaps we'll have to form an attorney-client relationship. But, you know, I'm not gouging anyone. We've all been in this together all along. And, you know, I plan on practicing for a long time. So I believe in relationship building.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for all your work with the Event Safety Alliance and just all the work that you've been doing to get information out to so many event planners who are looking for it. And I really appreciate your time today. I know we went long, but there's so many good things to talk about. So thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, you're very welcome. And thank you to all of your podcast listeners and viewers. You know, good on you for hanging in there. I personally am exhausted from talking about COVID. And, you know, as much as I appreciate video technology and I listen to podcasts all the time, you know, the very few times when I get to see people in person, I'm reminded how much better it is to see people in person.
Absolutely. I can't wait to get to that point when my son is a little older. We can actually see human beings again.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Yeah. I mean, what we do is really important. You know, I don't want to overstate this, you know, start waving the flag around with patriotic music about event planners and, you know, event professionals, but we are an important part of society. Getting people together to celebrate events, to hold meetings together where, you know, the greatest learning happens, you know, in the corridors or at the bar at night after the sessions. You know, I'm a conference speaker. I know that's not where the greatest learning takes place. It takes place afterwards. And, you know, people wander by. Hey, Steve, I saw you cracked some joke, but it made me think about something else. What we do is really important. So, you know, don't let anyone ever minimize the significance of any of the work that you all are engaged in by saying, well, you know, I'm gonna exercise some freedom. No, the real freedom is being able to get together again without worrying about whether we're gonna be hospitalized as a result. That's freedom.
No better way to end this podcast. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to all of you who are listening live. We will be back next week with yet another episode and lots to think about and ponder. So we'll be sharing this on all our social channels as well. Thanks again, Steve, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye.